Ayin Ches Amar Aleph, we're up to the sixth line in the Gemara. So the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, Im Nemar Banim Loma Nemar Doros, V'im Nemar Doros Loma Nemar Banim. The Gemara wants to know, in the context of the psukim that describe the prohibition against marrying a first and second generation Mitzri, or the heter to marry a third generation, the Torah uses two different terminologies. It says, Banim Asher Yivaladu Lahem Dor Shilishi. It says that sons that are born from a third generation. So the question basically is, why do you need to use both terms? Why do you have to use the term Banim and the term Doros? In other words, the pasuk should be consistent. So the Gemara explains, Im Nemar Banim Below Nemar Doros Hayisi Omer Ben Rishon Vesheni Asar Shlishi Mutter Lechach Nemar Doros. Had the pasuk only said Ben as opposed to Doros, one might have thought that the prohibition against the Mitzri, Rishon, and Sheni doesn't mean first and second generation. It means if, let's say, I'm a Mitzri, my first two kids are not allowed to marry regular Jews, my third kid is. So it has to say Doros to say no, that it means first and second generation are not allowed to, but third generation is. On the other hand, V'im Nemar Doros, Alo Nemar Banim, Hayisi Omer La'osana Omdem Al Harsinai, Lechach Nemar Banim. On the other hand, had the pasuk only said Doros and not Banim, I would have said that the prohibition against marrying the first two generation Mitzriim begins from the people on Har Sinai. In other words, back in the time when the Torah was given, those first two generations would not be allowed to marry Mitzriim, but maybe Bazman Hazeh, there is no Isser anymore, so that's why the Torah has to highlight Banim, that the Isser even applies Bazman Hazeh. Then the Gemara says, Lahem Mehem Minei, Lahem Halechach Ar Psulan. So the Pasuk uses the word Lahem twice, Banim Asher Yivaladu Lahem Dor Shilishi Yavo Lahem Bekal Hashem. Why does it say Lahem twice? So the Gemara derives two things from these words lahem. The first is that you start the count from the person himself. In other words, one might have thought that when we talk about a third generation Mitzri, maybe it starts from his son. In other words, maybe it's really the fourth generation that's permissible. So no, the chiddush is that the first generation is the person himself, and the third generation is his grandson. And the other chiddush is that you follow the disqualification, which basically means that if, let's say an Egyptian, a first or second generation Egyptian married a regular Jew, which he wasn't supposed to do, so then their children are also considered to be Egyptians for those first two generations, until the third generation, at which time the child is now allowed to marry a regular Jew. Then the Gemara explains the itchrich lemichtav lahem.
Rabbi, yeah. Can they define any place in here? I know this stuff doesn't apply today, but when they say Egyptian,
well, it does apply today. I mean, it does apply today. We just don't necessarily know who the Egyptians are per se. That's a separate issue. That's a separate question.
Does that mean it's somebody who's just born in Egypt, or how?
No. Well, yeah. That's kind of the overarching question in all of these issues. How do you define a person from any nation? So once the Gemara tells us in several places that once Samcheirav mixed all the nations up, we don't really know how to define anyone. So again, it these questions become moot almost for a technical point. But yeah, in theory, it doesn't necessarily have to do with where you're born, but at what nation you're a part of. Again, we'll talk more about it as we go on in the daf. Okay, so the Gemara says, Ve'itchrich lemichtav lahem, Ve'itchrich lemichtav asher yivoladu. Di'i kasav rachamana asher yivoladu, Hava amina mi b'neihem minei, kasav rachamana lahem. Ve'i kasav rachamana lahem, Hava amina mitris mi'uberes, shenezgaira hiu v'nachad, kasav rachamana asher yivoladu. So again, the Gemara says that we need both of these terminologies. We need lahem, and we need the phrase asher yivoladu, because if the Torah only said asher yivoladu, again, I might have thought that the count for the three generations start from your kids. In other words, you don't count as the first generation. On the other hand, if the Torah only said lahem, so then I might have thought that, let's say I have an Egyptian woman who's pregnant, who then converts, she and her son count as one generation. So no, the chiddush is that she's one generation and her son is considered to be the next generation. Okay, then the Gemara says, ve'itchrich lemichtav lahem hacha, ve'itchrich lemichtav lo gabi mamzer. De'ikas of rachamana hacha, mishum devami tipa psula, aval mamzer devami tipa kshera imalo, ve'ikas of rachamana gabi mamzer, mishum de'ein ra'i lavo bekal. So basically, the Gemara says that these superfluous terms, lahem by the Mitzri and lo by a mamzer, are necessary because they basically come to offset a mistaken hava amina. One might have thought in the case of the Mitzri, so a Mitzri comes fundamentally from an impure seed, from impure semen, because the person wasn't Jewish when they were conceived. On the other hand, a mamzer, even though a mamzer was born through illicit relations, all the people involved in the conception of the mamzer were Jewish. On the other hand, you can make the argument that whereas a mamzer is forbidden from ever marrying into the Jewish people, a mitzri after two generations becomes permissible. So because there are all these kind of differentiations between a mamzer and a mitzri, the Torah has to highlight in each context that there are specific halachos that pertain across the board. Okay, then the Gemara says,
Rabbi, how long does the title of mamzer carry?
So that's a good question. So the simple answer is forever, but we'll see on the next Amma that there may be certain opinions that may distinguish. It may depend on the generation, male and female. We'll hopefully get to that in a little bit. Okay, so the Gemara says, Amar Rabba Bar Bar Chanan, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mitzri Sheni Shenasa Mitzris Rishona Bena Shlishi Havai, Alma Kasavar Basar Didesha Dinalei. So imagine the following case. You have a second generation Egyptian man marries a first generation Egyptian woman and gives birth to a son. The Gemara says that son's considered a third generation Mitzri. So what do you see from here? Obviously, you're following the father. Since the father is a second generation, his son is going to be considered a third generation. So the Gemara then asks, Masiv Rav Yosef, Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Yecholin Mamzerim Li Taher, Ketzad, Mamzer Nasa Shivcha Havlad Eved Shichrero Nimtza Ben Chorin Alma Basar Didasha Dinanle. So there's a famous idea the Gemara in Kiddushin talks about how to quote unquote purify or undo the status of Mamzeris. Now, once a person's a Mamzer, so there's really not much you can do to rectify their status, but there is something that could theoretically be done for their potential children. So let's say you have a person who's a Mamzer. So what you do is you have the Mamzer marry a Shivcha Kenainis, and then any children they have, you free them, and now they're considered to be regular Jews. So obviously, the fact that this stunt even works is an indication that we're following the mother. If we follow the father, then all the kids are mamzerim anyway, right? So the Gemara asks, how could our Gemara earlier claim that you follow the father's lineage in terms of declaring, you know, if a second generation Egyptian male married a first generation Egyptian female, that the child is a third generation because you're following the father? This case clearly assumes that you're following the mother. Otherwise, there's no way to rectify the status of a child as a mamzer. So the Gemara says, no. Shaini hasam de amar kroha yishav yiladeh atiyaladoneha. This is a special exception. Since it says in Parshas Mishpatim that the wife and the children who are given over to the Eved belong to the master, you see that the children, and specifically by a Shivcha Kenainis, the children belong to the mother. But that's not an indication that in general that lineage follows the mother. Generally, the assumption is we follow the father. There happens to be an exception when it comes to a Shivcha Kenainis based on the pasuk. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Masiv Rava. Amar Rav Yehuda, min yamin ger mitzri haya. Min yamin ger mitzri haya lichaver mitamidi Rabbi Akiva. So this guy, Min Yamin, who was an Egyptian convert, was a colleague of Rabbi Yehuda from the students of Rabbi Akiva. The Amar, ani mitzri rishon, the nasasi mitzris rishona, asi levanai mitzris shnia, kadesha yehe ben mini roi lava bakal, the isal kadaitach basre didesha dinanle, afilu rishona nami. So basically, Min Yamin's idea was, he said, I'm going to marry a first generation Egyptian woman, I'll give birth to a son who will be second generation, he'll marry a second generation Egyptian woman, so that their child will be third generation who can marry a regular Jew. But if what we're claiming is true, that you follow the father, why does Min Yamin insist that his son has to marry Dafka, a second generation Egyptian woman, even if he married a first generation Egyptian woman and had a son? That son should still be considered a third generation, as we've already established in the Gemara earlier, that you follow the father's lineage. So the Gemara says, you're right. The Gemara says, Ha'amar le Rabbi Yochanan Lasana, Tinei Rishona. You have to amend the Braisa to say that what he really meant to say was, I'm going to let my son marry a first generation Egyptian woman, which again, just highlights what we just pointed out, that the lineage follows the father. Then the Gemara says, Ki asa Rav Dimi Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mitzri Sheni Shenasa Mitzris Rishona Bena Sheni Havai, Alma Basar Ine Shadinalei. So now the Gemara almost reverses course. It says that if a second generation Egyptian man marries a first generation Egyptian woman, the son is considered to be a second generation, which indicates that you follow the mother, which seems to be against everything we were saying before. So Amar Le Abaye, Elohada Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Hifrish Chatas Mu'uberes V'yalda, Ratza Miskaper Ba, Ratza Miskaper Bivlada, Iyamar Pishlama Uber Lav Yerech Imo Hu Havale Kemafer Shtechatos Liachrayas. So Amar Rav Ushia, Hifrish Shtechatos Liachrayas Miskaper Ba Achas Man Vashnia Tire, Ela Iyamar Uber Yerech Imo Hu Havale Vlad Chatas Uvlad Chatas Lemisa Azil. So comes the Gemara almost out of left field with a discussion that's really, that really focuses around Maseches Temura. The Gemara in Temura discusses the following. Imagine a person has an obligation to bring a carbon chatas for some avera they committed, but they're afraid that they may come to lose the animal, so they decide to designate a pregnant animal as a carbon chatas, specifically the animal along with the child. So basically, the Gemara says that you can decide to get kapara from either one. You can decide to get kapara from the mother or from the baby. Either one is fine. Now, the problem is like this. The Gemara explains, if you're going to tell me that we subscribe to what's called uber lav yerech imo, that the baby inside of the mother is not really a part of the mother, it's really a distinct separate entity, so then I understand this halacha. Why? Because the Gemara in Temura tells us that if a person designates, in other words, if you hold uber lav yerech imo and you designate the mother, which is pregnant, so that's the equivalent of designating two separate animals as a carbon chatas for achrayus, for some sort of a guarantee. You have an obligation to bring a carbon chatas. The Gemara quotes in the name of Rav Oshia that if you designate two animals for an obligation of a chatas, the din is you get kapara with one of them, and the second one you have to let it graze until it develops a mum, and then you have to sell it off and redeem it. Again, we spoke a lot about this back in Maseches Temura. But basically, the bottom line is that this halacha only really makes sense if you hold uber lav yerech imo. If you hold uber yerech imo, if you hold that the child, that the baby inside of the mother animal is really part of the mother, so then the Gemara says this halacha makes no sense because this is what we call avlad chatas. We spoke a lot about this back in Maseches Temura, that there's a famous halacha l'moshe nisilein that's known as the chamesh chatos hamesos, which means there are five cases, this being one of them, where you have to let a carbon chatas die. If an animal was designated as a chatas, and in this particular case it happened to have a child, that child, you can't do anything with it. You have to let it die. That's a halacha l'moshe nisilein I call the chamesh chatos hamesos, one of five cases where the animal must be left to die. If that's the case, then you're not allowed to offer this animal as a carbon chatas, and the halacha makes no sense. Now, why is the Gemara quoting this halacha here at all? So the point is that Rabbi Yochanan seems to be convinced that the only way this halacha makes any sense is if you subscribe to the principle of uber lav yerechimo. Now, in other words, that the fetus, that the child, is not really part of the mother. Now, if that's true, how does that translate to our case about the mitzri? That's another way of saying that the child is not really part of the mother. The child is basically a separate generation from the mother, which actually seems to fly in the face of what the Gemara was saying before. Because again, the Gemara before was claiming that if a second generation Egyptian male married a first generation Egyptian woman, that the child is a second generation Egyptian, meaning we follow the mother. But it's not true, because Rabbi Yochanan just proved in this whole crazy case of the carbon chatas that uber lav yerechimo, the child should really be its own distinct entity. So the Gemara says, you're right. Yeah, Billy, what were you saying?
I'm surprised they didn't bring up here. We know that for a child to be considered Jewish, the mother needs to be Jewish. It doesn't matter what
we're
the
gonna.
Mother is.
We're gonna. Okay. Well. Okay. Two things. First of all, we're gonna briefly touch on that point in a second in the Gemara. But you're also making assumptions that the Gemara is assuming that we know that as a given already. Meaning we know that as la halacha, but it's not necessarily a given at this stage in the Gemara that any of those facts are true. It could be subject to machlokas. But again, we're gonna get back to that point in a second. Okay. So again, the Gemara says ishtik. That the Gemara says that that Abai did not know how to respond to this, because it seems pretty clear that uber lav yerechimo, and if that's the case, so then this child should actually not be considered a second generation Egyptian. It should be a third generation. So the Gemara says no. Amar le dilma shayni hasim dechsev asher yivaladu hakasuv tolo beleida. The Gemara says no. Even if generally speaking you think uber lav yerechimo, this could be the exception, because again, in the context of the halacha regarding the mitzri and parshas kiseitze, the Torah uses the terminology asher yivaladu, that the Torah makes everything dependent upon birth. So in other words, even if normally you think uber lav yerechimo, the Torah specifically attributes the status of this child to its the person who gave birth to it. In other words, to the mother. So everything basically goes back to the mother here. Okay, so the Gemara says, Amar le, karkafna, chazisei l'reshach b'nei amudika, amar Rabbi Yochanan l'hashmaita, taima d'chsev asher yivaladu, haba'alma basaravu asher din alei. So basically Abai was praising him for saying that it's as if you were at the shir when Rabbi Yochanan said this. That's exactly the logic that Rabbi Yochanan put forth, and he said the only reason why we follow the mother is because the pasuk says asher yivaladu. The implication is that in general you're going to follow the lineage of the father. Okay, then the Gemara says Eloha da amar Rava nachris meuberes shenizgaira bina ein sarich tevila amai ein sarich tevila. So this touches a little bit on what Billy was just asking before. Let's say you have a non-Jewish woman who's pregnant, who's now in the process of conversion. So the Gemara says when her son is eventually born, let's say assuming this is already after she went to the mikvah, after she fully converted, the son does not require tevila. The son is fully Jewish when the son is born, even though he was conceived while the mother was not Jewish. So the Gemara says, so the question is, why does the son not require his own separate tevila? The Gemara says like this, maybe you'll argue that the reason why the son does not require its own separate tevila is because the son does not really constitute a chatzitza at all. Now, what's the definition of a chatzitza? So mida oraisa, in order for something to be a chatzitza in the context of going to the mikvah, it needs to be what's called rubo umakbid. It needs to take up the majority of your body, and you also have to care about it being there. So that's mido raisa. If you're lacking either one of those two things, meaning, for example, we know that women are that we're makbid to try and make sure that they remove all the dirt from under their fingernails. That's not required mido raisa, because it's not rubo. It's not taking up the majority of the body. If they also happen to not be makbid about it, one thing most people probably are makbid about the dirt under their fingernails, but if they happen to not be makbid about it, so then that wouldn't, then it would be mutter mutter lechachila for them to go to the mikvah even with the dirt on their fingernails. But the problem is that in this case with the woman being pregnant, so the baby takes up the entirety of the woman. It's not a majority issue. So the question is, why is the baby's presence in the woman's body not a chatzita? And the Gemara answers, obviously, because shiny uber dahinu revise, because that's the natural order of things, right? Because a woman is supposed to be pregnant, so it's not like, it's not an interposition. It's not something artificial that was put onto her body. It's part of her. So the Gemara says, you see from here that that's not really called a chatzit. The Gemara says, ki asa ravina rabbi yochanan, be'umos halech achar hazachar, nizgayru halech achar pagum shebeshneim. So what does this mean? Be'umos halech achar hazachar, kedesanya, minayin le'echad min ha'umos shebal ha'kenainis v'holid ben, she'atar rashay leknosu be'eved, she'ne'emar ve'gami b'nei ha'toshavim ha'garim imachem mehem tiknu. Yachal afilu echad min ha'kenanim shebal achas min ha'umos v'holid ben, she'atar rashay leknosu be'eved, talmud lomar asher holidu ba'artzechem, min ha'noladim ba'artzechem, ve'lo min ha'garim ba'artzechem. The Gemara says that when it comes to someone who at the time was, let's say, from one of the seven nations, wasn't Jewish, and they married or had relations with a Kenani. So it depends on which direction we're talking about here. So if, let's say, someone from one of the seven nations had relations with a Kenani woman and gave birth to a son, that son is considered a Kenani, and you're allowed to purchase that child as an Eved Kenani. Based on the pasuk we read in last week's Parshas Bahar, that we follow, Mibnei HaToshavim HaGarim Imachem Mehem Tiknu. You can purchase as an Eved Kenani from the people who are dwelling amongst you. But if it was in the reverse, if in other words, if let's say, for example, it was a male Kenani who had relations with a female from one of the seven nations, and that child is not considered a Kenani, it cannot be purchased as an Eved Kenani. How does the Gemara know that this distinction is true? Because it says, Asher holidu va'artzechem, that they were born in your land, so only those who were born in your land, in other words, whose mothers were Kenanim, those you can purchase as an Eved Kenani. But if it's the reverse, if they're simply living in Eretz Yisrael, but they were born somewhere else, so then they're not subject to the dinim of Eved Kenani. Then we said, Nizgayru halechach harpagam shebishneyam b'mai. We said that if let's say the child was born after the parents converted, you follow the most flawed lineage of the parents. What does that mean? Ilema b'mitzri shenasa amonis, my pagam shebishneyam isba, amoni velo amonis. If the case is where let's say an Egyptian male marries a female from Ammon, so then there's nothing pagam about that, because as we know, a female from Ammon is allowed to marry into the Jewish people. Ela b'amoni shenasa mitzris, izachar havi shadi basar amoni, inakeva havi shadi basar mitzris. It must be the reverse, that there was a male from Ammon who marries a female Egyptian. So a male from Ammon is never allowed to marry into the Jewish people. So let's say they give, in other words, if they give birth to a son, so then you're going to be machmir to treat the son as if he's from Ammon, meaning you're never going to let him marry a regular Jew. If they give birth to a daughter, then you're going to be machmir to treat her as if she's an Egyptian, because first two generations, as we pointed out yesterday, are forbidden whether they're male or female, whereas a female from Ammon is permitted across the board. So basically, the worst point is that you're going to basically throw the book at this couple, and whatever the child is, you're going to be the most machmir. So they give birth to a son, you treat the son as if he's from Ammon, meaning to say he's always forbidden. And if they give birth to a daughter, you're going to treat her as if she's an Egyptian, meaning that she's forbidden for the first two generations. Okay, says the Mishnah, Mamzerin unesinin asurin v'isuran isur olam, echad zecharim ve'echad nekebos. A mamzer and the nesinim, who we're going to talk a lot about on today's daf and tomorrow's daf, who are the people who are the givonim, who we'll see were forbidden from marrying to Klal Yisrael, either by Moshe, Yehoshua, or David, as we'll talk a lot about throughout this daf. So the mamzerim and the givonim are never allowed to marry into the Jewish people, and that is an eternal prohibition. That prohibition applies for males and females and for all generations. So it says the Gemara, Amar Eish Lakish, Mamzeres li achar asara doros muteres, yolef asiri asiri me amoni yumoavi, mala hala nekevos mutaros, afka nekevos mutaros. Comes Eish Lakish with a startling statement that says that it's not really true that a female mamzer, that a mamzeres, is always forbidden. After 10 generations, a mamzeres is allowed to marry a regular Jew. He derives that from Exira Shavar, from the word asiri, by Ammon and Moav. Just as by Ammon and Moav, the females are permissible to, are allowed to marry into Klal Yisrael, so too a mamzeres, after 10 generations, is allowed to. So the Gemara says, hang on a second, imala halon miad, afkan miad, the Gemara says, so hang on a second. But a woman from Ammon and Moab can marry into the Jewish people right away. Now we're claiming that a mamzeres has to wait 10 generations. So the Gemara says, yeah, that's the Gzeirah Shavah. The Gzeirah Shavah is that's the din, that even though it's, in other words, the parallel is not 100% exact, but that's what the Gemara is saying. The Gemara is saying that's the din, that when it comes to a mamzeres, so she has the same status as a female from Ammon and Moab just after 10 generations. So the Gemara asks, that's against the Mishnah. The Mishnah said explicitly that a mamzer the Givonim, they're never allowed to marry to the Jewish people, whether male or female at all. So the Gemara says, no, Lokashia, this is a famous machlokas that appears in Maseches Bava Kamma and a few other places in Shas as well. And this is actually a very, very technical machlokas about how to derive certain things from one another, how to make extrapolation. So Reish Lakish, who's claiming that basically that, you know, that there's a certain point at which a mamzeres is allowed to marry to the Jewish people, he subscribes to the principle of what's called don mi no mina. Don mi no mina basically just means that when I'm deriving B from A, so the assumption basically is that all the characteristics of A are going to be essentially be copied and pasted onto B. Even if some of those halachas don't necessarily make sense, they're not necessarily logical. Like, for example, the mamzeres, we're saying she's basically like a fema from Amon Amoav, but after 10 generations. So, in other words, the halachas don't line up 100%, but that's the din. That's the way the limud works. According to Reish Lakish, we buy into this principle called don mina mina, which basically means when we make extrapolations, we're just kind of copying and pasting everything without care, without regard for how, you know, kind of how it plays out in the specific context of the halacha. Whereas according to the Tana of our Mishnah, who says that no, that a mamzer and mamzeres can never marry into the Jewish people, they hold this, of this other principle called don mina va'oke ba'astra, which basically means that when you're deriving B from A, you can't just, you know, copy and paste, you know, control C everything onto the other halacha. You actually have to figure out logically how does it adapt contextually into the second halacha. You can't just take all the halachas of A and stick them onto B and say that's what it is. It has to make sense logically. So according to our Tana, there is no allowance for a mamzeres after 10 generations. That's just not the case. So this is really kind of a technical machlokes about how to make limudim. Okay, then the Gemara says, Shalu es Rabbi Eliezer, mamzeres la'achra asar dori ma'u. So now the question was, what's the din in this halacha, in this case, about a mamzeres after 10 generations? Who do we pass like? Is it like our mission that says that it's that she's asura, or like Reish Lakish says she's muteres? So Amar lahem, mi yitin li dor shlishi va'ata harenu, alma kasavar mamzer lachaye, v'chein amar ravuna mamzer lachaye. So basically, Rabbi Eliezer almost kind of skirted the question, and he said, who will show me a third generation mamzer, and I will purify him? I'll make that mamzer into a kosher Jew. What was the point of that statement? He was basically saying that mamzerim don't live. They don't live past three generations. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? If that were true, that mamzerim didn't live past three generations, what's our Mishnah driving us crazy about telling us that mamzerim are always usher? Apparently, mamzerim are not even around anymore. So the Gemara says, no. The Gemara says, if everyone knows the person's a mamzerim, there's no chance that they're going to marry them, so then the mamzer can live. The only reason to not have mamzer live is so people don't trip up in the isra mamzer. So if you don't know the person's a mamzer, then the mamzer's not going to live at all. If we know he's a mamzer, he's going to live. If we don't know, if it's yediyah v'lo yediyah, we're not 100% sure if it's a suffake, so then the Gemara says that he'll only live up to three generations. That's what the Gemara meant. Okay, then the Gemara says, Hahu da have b'shivivusei de Rabbi Ami, achr zalei de mamzer hava. So there's a story of a guy who lived in Rabbi Ami's town, and Rabbi Ami one day said, that guy's a mamzer. So the guy started to cry. He was upset. He said, you know, you're ruining all of my shidduch prospects. So Rabbi Ami said, you should thank me. I just gave you life, because as long as you were in the balance, so we didn't know if you were a mamzer, so your life was kind of hanging in the balance. Now I just said you're a mamzer, so now you're going to live a long, happy life. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rav Chana bar Ada, Nesinim David Gazer Aleim, Shene Amar, VaYikra Hamelech LaGivonim, VaYomer Aleim, VaHagivonim Lo Mi Bnei Yisrael Hema." Comes the Gemara and says that David Hamelech made a gzera to not allow the people of Givon, the Givonim, to marry into the Jewish people. My time of Gazer Aleim. What was the reason for that gzera? Dichsiv VaHira Av Bimei David Shalosh Shanim Shana Achar Shana. There was a famine for three consecutive years in the land. Shana Rishona Amar Lahem, Shema Ovdei Avodas Kochavim Yishprochem. Dichsiv VaAvatem Elohim Achirim. So the first year David said, oh, maybe the reason why there's no rain, why there's a famine, is because everyone's worshipping idols. And it says in Kriya Shema that if you stray from Hashem and you worship idols, Hashem will not bring the rain. So David did an investigation. There was nobody worshipping idols. Then he said, oh, maybe they're all involved in immorality, because it says in Sefer Yirmiyahu that Hashem holds back the rain and the winds if people are engaged in immoral activity. But he investigated, and there was no immoral activity going on either. Shlishis Amar Lahem Shema Postgate stuck up a rabbin Yishbachem Bein Nosman. Dichsev Nisiyim Viruach Vegeshem Ayin Ishmis Halel Bematas Shaker Barku Velomatsu. Maybe they're pledging to give tzedakah publicly, but they're not really doing so. And that's what's causing the rain to not, that's what's preventing the rain from coming. So again, that's based on a pasuk in Mishlei that, you know, that a person pledges to give tzedakah but doesn't do so, it's going to prevent the rain. But that, again, was that was also not happening. So Amar In Hadar Tolu Yalabi Miad Vayiv. So David realized that the rain was being held back and the famine was happening all because of him. So David turned to Hashem. David uses the Urim V'tumim to consult Hashem. So the Pasuk says in Sefer Shmuel that Hashem says to Shaul and to the house of the bloods for having killed the Givonim. What does that mean? El Shaul Shalom Nisbar Kahalah. bracha. So Hashem was taking the Jewish people to task for not having properly eulogized Shaul. And the Beis Hadamim is an allusion to the fact that Shaul killed the Givonim. So asks the Gemara, there's no pasuk in Navi that says that Shaul killed the Givonim. So Ela mitoch shaharag Novi rakohanim shayim aspikin lohem mayim umazun mala lavakasuf keilu hargan. Because Shaul, we know, killed the city of Nov, the city of Kohanim, that city was sustaining the Givonim. So by killing them, he keilu killed the Givonim. So the Gemara asks, katava el Shaul shalonis bar kahalacha. The Katava Allah Sher Himis HaGivonim. So the Gemara says there seems to be a theory here. On the one hand, Hashem is upset that David didn't properly eulogize Shaul, but he's also upset that Shaul killed the Givonim. So which one is it? What exactly is Hashem upset about? So the Gemara says in to Amar Shlakish, May Dichsiv Bakishu as Hashem Kol An Ve'aretz Asher Mishpato Paalu, Ba'asher Mishpato Sham Paalu. It says in Sefer Tzafanya that those who are humble will seek out Hashem, where His justice is, so too are His good deeds. In other words, anytime you make mention of Hashem's justice, you also have to reference a person. Good deeds. So despite all of Shaul's wrongdoings and all of his misdeeds, you still had to reference his good qualities by eulogizing him properly. So Amar David, Shaul Nafkulu Tracer Yarchi Shata, Vladarch Limisbaday. So David said it's already been more than a year since Shaul died. It's no longer appropriate to eulogize someone after, you know, more than a year after their death. The Sinim Nikrina Unifaisin. So let's go get the Givonim and try to appease them. So basically, the Givonim said, listen, we don't want any money, we don't want any gold and silver, all we want is for you to hand over seven people from the house of Shaul, and we're going to kill them. They want a reprisal for Shaul basically having caused their death. So the Gemara says, Mifas velo faisinus. So David was trying to bargain with them, to negotiate with them, and they refused. They said, that's all we want. All we want are the seven people from the house of Shaul to basically act as some form of compensation for what he did to us. So Amar Shlosha Simanim Yeshbu Mazo Harachmanim Bahabashanim Gomei Chasadim. Rachmanim Dichsiv Nasan Lachar Rachamim Verichem Chave Herbecha. Bashanim Dichsiv Bavur Tia Yerasoa Penechem. Gomei Chasadim Dichsiv Laman Asher Yitzavaz Banavias Beso. Kol Sheishbo Shlosha Simanim Halal Royal Hidavik Bu Mazo. So David Amalach said, once he realized how cruel the Givonim were being, that their only compensation could be to kill seven people in the house of Shaul, David said, these people can't marry into Klal Yisrael, because we know Klal Yisrael has three qualities that describe them, three traits. They're merciful, they're ashamed, and they're people who do chesed, and these people clearly don't have any of those traits, and therefore David made a gzeira d'rabbanan that the Givonim are not allowed to marry into Klal Yisrael.